Hello and welcome to 433. This is a program dedicated to contemporary classical, avant-garde, experimental, and new music. Just how experimental do we get around here? Pretty experimental. Tune in every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. on CITR 101.9 and get experimental. Yes, hello, and this is indeed 433 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today we have the honor and privilege of welcoming Hildegard Westerkamp to the program. Hildegard is a renowned Canadian composer of electroacoustic music who deals extensively with the acoustic environment. Hildegard is of German origins and has emigrated to Canada in 1968. She is a UBC alumni and was one of the members of the World Soundscape Project founded by Canadian composer R. Murray Schafer in the late 60s at the Simon Fraser University. Her career as a composer spans several decades, and her music has been featured in two of Gus Van Sant's films, Elephant and Last Days. She is a founding member of the World Forum on Acoustic Ecology and the co-founder of the Vancouver Co-op Radio. Several of Hildegard Westerkamp's works will be featured in this year's Vancouver's New Music Festival, Sonic Topographies, which will be held between October 16th and 19th in several venues across Vancouver, including at the UBC campus. CITR and 433 will have the privilege of broadcasting two of these concerts live for your enjoyment, and both of them will feature Hildegard's works. So it is my absolute pleasure of welcoming Hildegard Westerkamp to 433. Welcome.
Thanks, Gregory. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
Well, it is absolutely my pleasure. Now, as I say, I wanted to maybe clarify for our listeners what the World Soundscape Project is. First of all, soundscape is a central concept informing the study of acoustic ecology. It was coined by R. Murray Schafer, and it describes a sound or combination of sounds that forms or arises from an immersive environment. And now you elaborate on this idea a little bit, combining music as environment and environment as music. And I wanted to ask you, this concept has a kind of musique concrète feel to it, very reminiscent of Pierre Schaeffer's evocation that music starts not from an abstraction, but from concrete sounds. His ability to compose music from train sounds, for example, was a reflection of emerging post-war experimentation and the embrace of new technologies. So is your concern for acoustic environments influenced by this mid-century experiment called musique concrète?
Really only partially. The real influence primarily comes from R. Murray Schafer and from working with the World Soundscape Project. Having been part of that project opened my ears to the sonic environment in a way that was absolutely inspiring. And I was both an activist in a way of wanting to perhaps try to improve the quality of our sound environment at that time. But I also actually found my kind of footing as a composer. I had never imagined that I would compose in my life, even though I studied music, but I never really thought of composing. And having learned recording and being in the studio, at the Sonic Studio in the World Soundscape Project, watching and listening to my colleagues, I suddenly realized that there was something for me as well in there. And so it was really the work of the World Soundscape Project that connected me with all the issues of soundscape and sound environment. Musique Concrète and Pierre Schaeffer's work also came in at that point, because we were often talking about Schaeffer's concept of the sound object. And where Barry Truax, my colleague Barry Truax, really was the one who taught me some of these studio techniques in the analog studio to process sounds from a recorded sound and then process it into something that becomes a much more abstracted sound. So Musique Concrète was different in that they ended up abstracting the sound to such an extent that you really didn't hear the source anymore. And that was actually on purpose. The environmental sound was a material for musical expression, for abstract musical expression. Soundscape composition, what sort of my work has come to be called now, is really the opposite. It wants to give a message. It has a message. It's not abstracted. But working with the sound object as a way of processing some of the recorded sounds that I work with, I have totally included in my work. So I'm like to ride that edge between the abstraction of the sound and really finding out what is the musical quality of a sound and what happens to it when it does become abstracted, slowed down, filtered, whatever it is. And then what happens when you put it right next to its original sound and let those speak together, so that you have the kind of imaginary world side to side to the reality, to the realistic sounds that we hear. That has really sort of become my style, that riding that edge of real sounds and imaginary sound. And Musique Concrète really plays one half of that part.
Well, let's talk a little bit then about that, riding that edge. I really like that analogy. And I feel that you have a great insight into this sort of both experimentation and at the same time the electroacoustic component of music. The electroacoustic, where I almost find, I want to say, analog or natural sound, you know, sound that derives itself from the grooves in vinyl or the environment around us. There is a work that I'm thinking of that has, well, I find great appeal for radio, and it's titled Cricket Voices. The work is from the CD Transformations from 1987. Is there anything that you'd like to say about this piece before we play it on radio?
Sure. It's actually a great example to play after what we just talked about in terms of sound object and environmental sound, because the it's called Cricket Voice because when I was in the Mexican desert with a group of artists in 1986, I think it was, we were in a very quiet environment, and one of the prevalent kind of night sounds was the cricket, and I would wander out into the desert to try to capture the cricket sounds. And one night I was doing that, and suddenly there was this solo singer right in front of my microphone. I didn't see the cricket, but it was like it came forward to my microphone and sang this 2-minute solo piece like a studio recording. It was so close up. So this close up recording was like a sound object. It lent itself to transformation, to processing, because it was in this very quiet desert environment. And so you hear the original cricket sound throughout the whole piece, but really, the piece is about what it sounds like in all sorts of transformations, mostly slowed down in different ways, and not so much sped up, but slowed down in the different rhythms that brings out. And then, of course, there's some other desert sounds, wind and all that kind of thing. But the piece really was trying to kind of honor this unbelievably beautiful voice of the cricket.
Okay, so let's play Cricket Voice from the CD Transformations, 1987. And it's recorded on 2-channel tape in the Zone of Silence in the Mexican desert. The piece is approximately 11 minutes long, and we'll be back with Hildegard Westerkamp to chat some more. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've just heard Cricket Voices, Cricket Voice by Hildegard Westerkamp from the album Transformations, 1987. Hildegard, I was wondering if I can ask you about sound walking.
Yes. The concept of sound walks came also from Murray Schafer and was a large part of what I got interested in when I joined the World Soundscape Project. The whole concept of going for a walk and listening to your environment to me was just fascinating. And so one of my first tasks actually was, when I was working with Schafer, was to create a series of sound walks for a noise workshop that we were giving for all the staff and mayors of the Greater Vancouver Regional District, as it was called at that time. Now it's Metro Vancouver. And we invited them all to come to this noise workshop, and I was asked to create these sound walks. And at that time, I made a bunch of maps. I explored these routes at Simon Fraser University, drew a bunch of maps and handed out these maps with questions so people would go out on their own on sound walks and stop in certain places, and I would ask them to listen for specific things, and then we would all gather afterwards and have a discussion. But, you know, you can do sound walks in all sorts of different ways, and we have, just yesterday, Vancouver New Music put on a sound walk that I organized together with Igor Santiso and Elisa Ferrari, and we had this absolutely wonderful sound walk through downtown Vancouver yesterday. A different format, it's for a group, it's for an hour long. We walk in silence and we listen to the environment, and it has a very interesting effect. The word sound walking also refers to a radio program that I used to do at Co-op Radio years ago. And that was sound walks kind of transferred into the radio medium. So I would go out and record anything in Vancouver and use my own voice as a kind of a mediating informational voice between the listener and the environment. So I would just simply state things like where I was and what the date was, what the weather was, maybe some other aspects of what we heard and what was going on around us. And that was a one-hour program for about 10 months on weekly one-hour program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio in 1978-79, long time ago.
Well, sounds wonderful. Perhaps I can come along on one of the sound walks.
Well, definitely. People could check the website of Vancouver New Music. We have at least 4 sound walks a year that are offered as part of the concert season.
Well, perhaps in the same vein, I can ask you, Michel de Certeau writes the practice of everyday life, of daily life as kind of repetitive and unconscious. In the chapter Walking in the City, he distinguishes between the top-down strategies of governments and corporations and the practices of walkers at street level. In a way, the practices of walkers are never fully determined, and here the author finds a kind of strategy against repression. Would you describe a sound walk in the way that you envision it as a kind of practice of creative resistance?
Yes, one could definitely say it that way, creative resistance, but it's also a deep connecting at the same time, which, in fact, I think when one deeply connects to the real issues in life, you begin to also become creative about resistance towards all the things that are being handled repetitively and unconsciously in the environment. So one of the sentences that I wrote as an introduction to a walk yesterday was that sound walks like silence are useless in a profit-driven world. They are a listening practice which reveals the environment to our ears and opens inner space for noticing. And when we get into a state of resistance, we have noticed something. We've noticed that there's something that needs to be changed. And listening, of course, is a wonderful practice to begin to notice what is going on out there. What is in fact the world sounding like, and how do I relate to it as a listener? And in that practice, then, we begin to understand how things may need to be changed. And that is what we could call a creative resistance, yes.
Now, do you mind if we take our listeners along for perhaps a walk through the city?
No, that's great. It's a walk through the downtown east side, basically. But it's a composed walk. I mean, it's not a sound walk recorded as often as done now. It's not a documentation of a sound walk. This is a deeply composed piece.
It's from the same CD that we played it from, Transformations, but the piece is from 1996, is that correct?
No, it's from 1981, I think.
Much earlier.
And the poem on it was written by a Vancouver poet, Norbert Ripsat.
Okay, let's give it a listen, and we're going to play about a 10-minute excerpt.
Discarded shoe, like an open mouth, a burn on the pavement.
Somewhere a man is carving himself to death for food. Day like an open wound.
Discarded shoe, like an open mouth, a burn on the pavement.
Bye, 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 bye
A house containing three children flashes once and is gone.
A single robbery.
A single robbery.
A single robbery.
Somewhere a man is carving himself to death for food. Day like an open wound.
With eyes like a giant crystal, catching the angles of light, the city borders the skin.
Gold, Floyd, on the bridge of Sunday, on the living God's finger. Rings on your fingers. Would you give me a song? I feel so ashamed. When I die, there I go. Kill the day, you know. Well, that's it. No, here you just walk around, you know, and wait, you know, and oh, well, sometimes he eats, you know. Well, if he eats, you know, okay. If he don't, well, you just keep walking.
Alcoholic, why? I ask him. Why? I don't want to be a person like that. But I mean, I just can't figure out, you know, but I mean, why? But I mean, do I have to land up in a skid row? Why? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, but I mean, I've been drinking tonight. But why I have been drinking? Why? Nobody say why. Nobody asked me any question. But I mean, how come I've been drinking? But I just can't understand. But I mean, tell me just one thing. Why do I have to get drunk? Why? You tell me that.
Just heard an excerpt from A Walk Through the City off of the album Transformations from 1981. The album itself is from 1996.
With the poetry and voice by Norbert Rupsat.
Thank you. Reminding me. Now, I wanted to ask you, of course, Armory Schaefer was a very instrumental person in your life. You worked as colleagues. I was wondering, what inspired your involvement with the World Soundscape Project? How did you meet Armory Schaefer? What were your subsequent influences?
It's a very simple story. I heard a lecture that Murray Schaefer gave at UBC in the music department in, I think, 1971 or 72 when I was a student there. And I walked out of that lecture with my ears popped open. That was basically it. And it was so intense that I remembered that lecture a few years later while I was teaching school, and I ordered some of his the new books called The Book of Noise, a small little book that was dealing with the issues of noise, and I was integrating that into my role as a music teacher and was often questioned, what does that have to do with music? But yeah, I did some projects with the students. And while I was teaching, I was reminded that Murray Schafer is at SFU and has the World Soundscape Project. And one day I just grabbed the phone and phoned him and basically said I would like to speak with him and ultimately would like to work with him. And so I had went up to Simon Fraser, met him. We had a fairly long, productive meeting. And this was at the end of the school year. And then I found myself working for him in the summer holidays. And it was so absolutely the right place for me that I quit my teaching and then became his research assistant on his book that he was writing at the time, The Tuning of the World, or it's now called The Soundscape with the subtitle The Tuning of the World.
Now, you know, I work in anthropology, so for me, one of these really important figures is Stephen Feld. Mm-hmm. He was a kind of pioneer in the anthropology of sound. And he himself was also inspired by R. Murray Schafer to release what he called audio documents, such as Voices of the Forest. Of course, because his perspective is that of an ethnographer, he is more interested in the relationship between culture, sound, and place. But in your explorations of soundscapes, I find that you also might make central the notions of place and belonging. And a case in point for me is the work Liebeslied, or Love Song, which translates both across two languages and bridges sort of several acoustic environments. Can you tell us a little bit what inspired this work?
Yes, I mean, just to harken back to Stephen Feld a little bit, I met him first in Banff when we had our first international conference on acoustic ecology, and I was absolutely amazed by his work because he actually traveled as an anthropologist right into the areas where the people lived in and lived with them for 2 years and worked with them also. And some of the CDs that came out were basically chosen by the people. He did not just do a piece, but he worked with the people that he recorded to create the piece. In that level, I'm much more of a composer who wants to speak about place individually, really. And it has very much to do with my own musical language and my compositional language and expression about place. And Liebeslied, Love Song, is an interesting one because it's based on a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke, called Liebeslied, Love Song. And I used that poem to record really people that are very important in my life, male, female, German, Canadian, to read the poem for me. And they became the voices of the piece. And then I decided to surround myself in the studio with sounds of home from Germany, from where I grew up, and from Canada. And so the piece in general is a piece about love and connection, about home, sense of home and place. And with these materials, I just simply trusted that perhaps some of this would resonate with a listener, even though it's not their home and their friends and their voices, but perhaps some of that intensity of connectedness to place might come through in this piece. And I've actually done two pieces that are based on this poem. This particular one, I have worked also with the cellist Anne Bourne from Toronto, who contributed some of her cello sounds to this piece. And so what you're going to hear now is the soundtrack that includes all these sounds that I spoke about, plus the cello. And it's going to be performed this Thursday as part of the New Music Festival. And Peggy Lee will be contributing her, in addition, a live improvised cello part to this soundtrack, which is a very exciting kind of project. And she, in her marvelous way, contributes beautiful to this piece.
So let's hear it now. An excerpt from Liebeslied, Love Song for cello and electroacoustic soundtrack.
Thank you. Seele halten?
Wie soll ich meine Seele halten, dass sie nicht an deine
rührt?
Dass sie nicht an deine rührt.
Wie soll ich meine Seele halten, dass sie nicht an deine rührt?
How shall I hold my soul so that it does not touch yours?
How shall I hold my soul so that it does not touch yours?
How shall I hold my soul so that it does not touch yours?
How
lift it up over you so it reaches other things?
How shall I lift it up over you so it reaches
other things?
Wie soll ich meine Seele halten, dass sie nicht an deiner
rührt?
Wie soll ich sie hinheben über dich zu anderen Dingen?
How shall I hold my soul so that it does not touch yours?
How shall I lift it up over you
so it reaches other things?
Things.
That was an excerpt of Liebeslied, Love Song, the electroacoustic soundtrack. Now, during the festival, you will be able to hear this work along with a live cello part created by Peggy Lee. So let's chat a little bit as we're closing, coming to the top of the hour about the Vancouver New Music Festival. And this year it is called Sonic Topographies. It is an exploration of sound, music, and sustainability. The festival will feature your work spanning several decades, including the track we just heard, as well as Like a Memory from 2002, where scrap metal structures become musical instruments, Fantasy for Horns 2 from 1979, which combines the sounds of train horns, fog horns, and factory horns with the French horn, and École Polytechnique, dedicated to the 14 women slain at École Polytechnique in Montreal in 1989. I wanted to ask you, how does it feel to have this compendium of work, almost like a retrospective, performed alongside other composers? And do you see these pieces as representative of your career as a composer?
Well, I'm really grateful to Vancouver New Music and Giorgio Magnanenzi, the director, for having included me in this festival, because it's a wonderful opportunity to listen back to my work, in particular because this time the work that is being played, all of it has live components in it. Most of my work is actually electroacoustic and not live performances. And so I felt slightly challenged by that because I'm not necessarily hugely 100% comfortable with instrumental composing. And so I haven't composed that many pieces for instruments and live performers. And so the fact that they're playing only that, I think, is wonderful. And for me, very rewarding to work with the musicians that are going to be playing them. And they're representative of my career in the sense that the soundtracks are all electroacoustic and certainly fit into what I've done all along, working with environmental sounds, using environmental sound as my instruments. Plus, not so representative of most of my work are the live instruments. And so to me, this is actually a little bit of a new thing as well. It's not only a retrospective. And many people haven't heard my pieces with live performers.
Now, perhaps we can play a kind of outro to our program. I was thinking about this piece recently, and we played an excerpt of it on the program before. And it is to resonate with the idea of sustainability, which this work, well, some of your work at least, proceeds as if you were foretelling the future. I'm thinking At the Edge of Wilderness. At the Edge of Wilderness is a 52-minute installation recorded in southern BC between Kootenay and Slocan Lakes. And there are many remnants of ghost towns that I think really nicely highlight the relationship between the effects of human-made industry on the environment. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit about this piece before we feature a short excerpt to highlight before we say goodbye to you. And also I wanted to mention that it will be an installation that is featured at the Canadian Music Center on Davie Street and will be featured there until next Friday.
Yes, that's right. It's the installation piece At the Edge of Wilderness is I did together with photographer Florence Debuny, who has done some wonderful photography on sort of what shall I say, destruction abandoned places, and she and I traveled into that area between Caslow on Kootenay Lake and New Denver on Slocan Lake and explored all those kind of remnants of ghost towns that were thriving towns around 1900. And I knew the area from quite a long time ago. And so we spent a week there. She did her photography and I recorded the sounds that I would bang on all the structures there and record those sounds. I would also record the environmental sounds there. I would record us speaking about the project, speaking about the names of the towns, about our impressions. And so the piece is basically a photo sound installation where you will see her marvelous photos and our sounds. And it's really a kind of an impressionistic piece about what is it like when you suddenly encounter a ghost town in the middle of the wilderness.
So please visit, of course, the Canadian Music Center. And please stay tuned because CITR will be broadcasting live from two concerts at the Vancouver New Music Festival, Sonic Topographies. One will be at the Orpheum Annex on Thursday, October 16th, featuring your work, of course, as well as compositions by Aikio Suzuki, Anya Lockwood, and John Luther Adams. And again on Sunday, October 19th, at the Center for Interactive Research on Sustainability at the University of British Columbia, which, among the above-mentioned artists, will also feature the work of Michael O'Neill. And I wanted to thank Hildegard Westerkamp for coming to the program on this Thanksgiving Monday, rainy Monday. It is especially nice to have you with us because being a radio program, we are, of course, always trying to raise awareness of our sound environments or make our environments more sound. I wish you the best of luck in your performances this week, and I'm really looking forward to the live broadcast.
Thank you very much, Gregory.
Thank you.
Traces of some kind of life here are visible everywhere. Rusty iron.
Remains of tin roofs.
Sheet metal.
Tubs of some kind, old rusty tubs.
Blocks of concrete, walls of concrete. And yet, really, they're just a mess. This beautiful place, mountainous, high cedar trees, much water, 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 water everywhere. Industry has moved in here, mining, penetrating the mountain, extracting, and then me. No cleanup afterwards. Everything is left standing as it was.